If you were here last week, we talked about how difficult it can be to define what a lie is. When a false statement is simply an inaccuracy. When a false statement may actually be a good thing because it is motivated by highly intelligent love. And when a false statement clearly becomes a lie. This morning I'd like to try another exercise in definition, this time about the popular sport called gossip. Let's start from a premise we all accept. If we use the word gossip, we mean something more than simply exchanging information. John got a new job. That's a piece of information. Hey, have you heard the latest? John got fired. That moves us in the direction of gossip. It has a provocative hint that there is more to come, and that what is yet to come will be titillating. As a matter of fact, when people start out by asking, "Have you heard the latest?" we recognize the unmistakable prelude to a piece of gossip. Usually mild, sometimes mean. Gossip, we guess, must be as old as language itself. The first practical use of language might have been something like the caveman describing where the hunters could find the closest meal. But the earliest recreational use of language was when he started talking about what his neighbors were doing in the cave next door. Gossip. But perhaps harmless stuff. Because gossip runs the gamut from innocent curiosity to an intentional malice so bad that it turns into what we call slander. Talk that is deliberately meant to damage or destroy somebody else. But ordinary gossip is usually not so bad. The word comes apparently from the Anglo-Saxon word G-O-D-S-I-B-B-E, pronounced very quickly with the accent on the first syllable, gossipy. It means godparents or relatives. When people began to use it a great deal, it widened out to include friends. And then it widened again to include what you do with your friends or about them. You gossipy. You gossip. You talk about what the rest of the world is doing. And let's not deceive ourselves. We may wish it were otherwise. We may protest piously that we think it's just awful. But it's more fun to tell one another that Jane got stood up the other night than it is to report that she made straight A's this semester. Have you heard that Ben gave half of last month's salary to Venture House? Never goes from mouth to mouth with half the speed or persistence as, have you heard that Ben has left town with a touring Russian ballerina? Obviously, we run up and down a very wide scale. There is a trivial kind of micro-gossip that chuckles to find out that someone in the office has just mailed Richard a bottle of scope. But there is no real malice. No one would want Richard to overhear the whispers and be embarrassed. And gossip of that sort is seldom fatal. And we may as well acknowledge that all of us do it. We have shaken our heads in amazement at the folly of our friends, but we certainly don't want to lose them. We have said things about our best friends in moments of exasperation that we would not want them to know, and that are, in fact, only the smallest fraction of the truth about our relationship. And we know, if we know anything, that our best friend has done the same thing. It's human nature. A moment of irritation in a long history of trust and good sense, good times, and it's best that we never know the specifics. We talk about people, they talk about us. That very wise woman who wrote under the pen name of George Eliot gave us some very good advice. As to people saying a few idle words about us, we must not mind that any more than the old church steeple minds the crows cawing about it. A few idle words. Adolescents get a good start, perhaps because they have a little more time. Hour after hour, on or off the phone. It's the way we first learn to give shape to experience, to dissect human motivation, to extract some wisdom from what is going on. It's not simply a way of basking in the aura of somebody else's failure. It's also a tool of understanding. After all, it only takes a minute to tell what somebody did. We get our real mileage and enjoyment out of debating why he did it. And when we do that, we begin to touch on matters of choice and consequence, responsibility and will. And that, for all of us, is probably the beginning of moral inquiry, the first step toward a moral education. Through our daily lives passes a dense and bewildering parade of human follies. Sex, money, alcohol, kids, jobs, cruelty, betrayal. Mostly variations on the old seven deadly sins. And gossip is the way we have of sorting out this huge amoral brawl. The sociologist tells me, and it makes sense, that this is how we affirm community. I don't mean to deny that plain nosiness has a role in gossip, but it also confirms the fact that we really do care enough to wonder and to talk. What a dull world, what a horribly dull world it would be if what people did not matter to us. We go to a place where we used to live, or we come back home after a time away, and our first question is, what's been going on? Who's doing what? And most of this is harmless enough, touched more often than not with humor and amazement, with a moment's shaking of the head in amused disbelief, a realization that somebody else is as prone to failure and silliness as we are ourselves. And only occasionally, and then only among the truly mean-spirited, does it turn into that vicious thing we call slander. When that happens, there is no excuse for it. And it is true that this level of gossip can become, at its worst, murder by language. Ray Kochner read that many have died by the sword, but not so many as have been killed by somebody's tongue. But this is gossip gone to bad seed. Most of it is rather what one recent book calls emotional speculation. In their absence, because we want to be safe, or because we do not truly wish to hurt, we gossip about our politicians. Our children gossip about us. Employees gossip about their bosses. Bosses about their workers. Women about men. Men about women. It is the world's cheapest form of compensation for the tedium of most of daily life. In one of Jane Austen's novels, a shut-in listens gladly to the news that is brought to her. She says, "Call it gossip, if you will, but when Nurse Rook has half an hour's leisure to bestow on me, she is sure to have something to relate that is entertaining and profitable, something that makes one know one's species." So, to say lightly that we should never talk about other people is not only useless, since the pleasure is too great to be given up, but it is also an attack on community, because community depends on our caring enough to talk. The whole ethical and moral world in which we live is reaffirmed as we talk. But this kind of talk about others who are not present, this mild form of gossip, is always teetering on the edge of great danger. It can easily get us into the habit of judging others with so much pleasure and persistence that we forget how to judge ourselves. There's a great deal of truth in the old remark that we are judged by the way we judge others. We may give ourselves away more by our gossip, by our criticism, than by anything else we do or say. If we are selfish, for example, we tend to discover that fault in other people. If we are deceitful, we think all people are deceitful. Listen carefully to an unflattering portrait by a gossip, and you will more often than not find a good likeness of the one who does the talking. We may suspect another person of lying because of good evidence, or we may be suspicious only because we lie ourselves and can't help thinking that others are lying to us. The psychologist calls this tendency to judge others by ourselves projection. When we have a fault we don't want to face, we shove it down out of consciousness and lay it on our neighbor by way of relief. Gossip, mild or mean, is often a way of compensating for an inferiority complex. As it moves toward meanness and people get addicted, it becomes a way of building themselves up by pulling someone else down. Gossip, when it can be defended, has to be a sort of once-a-week game like football. When it goes on constantly, part of every conversation one has, then it becomes a disease, a kind of paranoia, and very hard to cure. But even then, the gossip is rarely eager to inflict any great harm on the victim. He is mainly interested in helping himself. He hopes to stand higher in the esteem of somebody by turning a spotlight on the faults of somebody else. One proof of this, I think, is that a gossip seldom talks about those in a lower social, economic, or intellectual scale. than her own. If you ask her why, she will likely say, "Oh, they aren't worth my trouble." But the truth is that we gossip about those in our own social set or a higher one because it's delicious to feel superior for a moment to an equal, and even more delicious to knock down somebody above us. Nobody ever hustled more than Pete Rose. Nobody ever played much better than Wade Boggs. When they fail us, gossip thrives on the unworthy joy of seeing the mighty fall. Surely some of what happened to John Tower was of that sort. I think the evidence was clear that he was a heavy drinker and an indiscriminate womanizer. But what really did him in was being arrogant and pushy for so many years around Washington. There were just too many people who didn't like him, who were unconsciously waiting for the moment to cut him down to size. Gossip is the knife that does that. There will always be some gossip. It's a game at whose table every one of us will sit at times. So we need a few cautions to help us avoid the risks. We need to remember that gossip becomes an ally in our tendency to hide from ourselves, overestimating the differences between ourselves and those who fall. Goethe said once that he never read the story of a crime without realizing that the seeds of that same thing were in himself. That is so uncomfortable a thought that most people won't admit it. But honest men and women know there is truth in what he said. And we have to ask ourselves at times if we are living vicariously through our gossip, enjoying a moment of wicked pleasure through somebody else's moral lapse, knowing all the while that we are perfectly safe from judgment or punishment. I saw a good instance of this in a movie the other night. There was a segment on big-time, money-grubbing TV evangelism and Christian theme parks. And the evangelist persuaded a young woman to come up in front of the entire audience of several thousand and confess her sins into the microphone. As she spoke of her illicit intimacies, the camera panned to a roly-poly gentleman in the audience who was leaning forward eagerly and licking his lips while he listened. No words were necessary. Nobody had to make a judgment on that scene. We all knew exactly what he was in spirit. It was not that he was too noble to do what she did that had kept him out of harm for so long. He simply lacked the courage, or he lacked the opportunity. And you know, of course, that much of what passes for virtue is nothing more than lack of opportunity. So if we find ourselves licking our lips, gossip has probably gone too far. It's no wonder, I suppose, that part of that old Hebrew scripture, which Ray did not read this morning, says, "Curses on the gossip. The talk of a third party has wrecked the lives of many and demolished homes and caused divorce." And no wonder that Jesus himself, with that combination of humor and critical sting so typical of him, should have given us the classic description of our occasional hypocrisy. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your friend's eye and fail to notice the plank in your own? How can you say to your friend, "Let me get the speck out of your eye," when there is a plank in your own? You fraud. Take the plank out of your own eye first, and then you can see clearly enough to remove your friend's speck of dust. If we take that directive seriously, some of our judgments and some of our gossip will have to be given up. Speck hunters are a prolific breed, and one of their favorite nesting grounds is around a church. It seems to me totally unrealistic to think that we can stop gossip. I do think if we care about each other, we can keep it good-natured and harmless for our sake and his.